Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Overlay, a poker podcast brought to you both by CCG Poker and Paramount Social Club. Hey, Brandon, how are you?
In beautiful Houston, Texas. Don't forget that.
I mean, I know I say that and people think I'm like, I don't know if I'm being funny. Like, I was in Texas last weekend, was it? Yeah, last weekend. Dude, Texas is, like, the weather is so nice. It's so nice. It's like, we're recording this in May of 2021. And last weekend, it was like 75 during the day. In the evening, it gets down to like low 60s. Like, it's perfect. Like, you literally couldn't ask for anything better.
That's ideal fat guy weather.
So it's so good.
Right up my alley.
I am not a fat guy, but I still like nice weather. I get the cold sweats occasionally. Don't know why. Is that like a thing?
Oh, wow. So for the listeners out there, I'm in traffic. First time ever recording in the car.
Right.
Crash ahead. Expect delays.
Nice.
Perfect time to,
pew, pew, pew.
Perfect time to park the car and record a podcast.
Oh, nightmare story. Bad beat story, I guess I'm going to go with. Bad beat story for traffic-wise. On the event home on Sunday, this past Sunday, from Bridgeview, I get on 294 North. Like, you have to get on 55 South and then get right on 294 North. You can't get on the 294 North there from that 79th Street entrance or exit, whatever it's called.
Yep.
So anyways,
you
hop on a 55 and then literally you don't even get out of the right lane. You just stay in the right lane, get on. Okay. So anyways, I'm going underneath the Oasis, which is like the first chance you can get off. And it says like all lanes closed. I was like, they don't mean all lanes closed, right?
Like, they just mean like one lane.
Like, most lanes are closed? No. All lanes closed from 12:40 when I got on at 294 until 3 o'clock in the morning. I sat there for 2 hours and change. I honestly almost fell asleep in the car on 294. And then it was, because I had been in Texas earlier that day. So I'm like,
now, when you mean sat there, do you mean like trickled along or like you didn't move?
I didn't move. It was a mile and a half from maybe like just before the Oasis to through it. Now, I mean, a couple times we bumped up, so I don't know if they like let a couple cars through or people were just like continually inching up on their neighbors until like enough people could move forward that I moved like maybe 300 yards. But I had gone 300 yards in about 2.5 hours. My car was in park. The dude next to me, seat completely reclined back, watching videos on his phone. I was nervous to do that because I was already pretty sleepy. And I'm like, there is a 100% chance I'm going to fall asleep if I do it. Which I'm like, what really happens? Like, the guy behind me starts honking on the horn until I wake up. Like, that's really not that bad. If I'd have known it was 2 hours. If I'd have known it was going to be 2 hours, I would have 100% taken a nap. Yeah. Anyways.
That is a bad beat.
That's
hopefully I'm not on this in 3 hours.
Nope. Episode 46. 46 episodes, Brandon. Can you believe that?
Well, really 45 and
today's episode. Okay.
Yeah.
So can you believe 45 episodes we've already done?
I can't. No. It's wild. Crazy.
We just reached 8,000 downloads last weekend. I noticed it when I was in Texas on Saturday. We are at like 8,001. So congratulations to you and I. Thank you for all of our listeners, to everyone who has followed and subscribed and checked us out on Twitter, which is at The Overlay Pod. We took out all the dots and scrambles and under capitalizations or whatever. It's just at The Overlay Pod now. Yeah, so thank you. It's amazing. We're blown away by the number of people who have downloaded this, and it's pretty dope. But today, episode 46 is a thank you. We're going to do poker terminology, the advanced course. I don't know if it's an advanced course, or we're going to kind of cover all bases here, beginners, intermediate to an advanced.
What have we done? We've done two other ones. We did like a poker culture where we talked about some slang words. And
yeah, like super like early that. On, it was like... episode, I'm looking it up right now, so just bear with me. Yeah, we did a couple of poker culture episodes where we talked about stuff. So like episode 10, Poker Culture 101, Stereotypes, Language, and the Unwritten Rules of Poker. So in there, we kind of talked about some specific poker language stuff. But like,
and that's
super
kind
basic.
Of the language that you would use at a poker table where you wouldn't use it in real life. You'd
correct.
Have to be in the poker culture,
like saying bad beat
lingo,
right? Bad beat really only works in poker, even though we use it in everyday life. That's one of them. There was also
Traffic Bad Beat.
Right. There was also a Poker Culture 201. That was episode 15. That was like chopping, staking, and what are the poker players wearing. So that was some kind of stuff. Then we did a poker, Advanced Poker Lingo 101. But we basically made that just about the six different types of calls. So
the
this
smooth call, the overcall, yeah, right. that kind of stuff.
That
so
was
this
episode
is the first
31.
Time we're going to have a broad dictionary
right.
open where you're just throwing out terms and we're defining them.
So today is, yeah, it's just more of like the poker terminology. No theme, just a bunch of different stuff that we want to kind of go over today because I, playing at a game, a 2-5 game streamed at Paramount Social, which is every Friday night from 7 to 11 p.m. So if you want to watch it on Facebook Live, you can check it out, facebook.com/ParamountPoker. They do a live 2-5 game. It plays super juicy, super big. You're going to see me on there a couple of times. I always play the first Friday of the month or whatever the day before the first Saturday of the month is, whatever that comes out to be. It's like just this past Friday, I played on it, had an awesome hand where I get aces under the gun. I limp in, the button raises, I 3-bet, he 4-bets, I all in 5-bet, which started to get, I was texting Brandon at the time. I was like, because I have nobody else to text my run good or bad beat stories to, I was like, hey, we should do a poker terminology one. And then I think I sent you two terms and that was it.
Yeah, you got two. You're like, this is a great idea. Here's my two terms.
Come Here's up my with two. And I came up with squeeze play, because I feel like people use that term incorrectly a lot, and pivot card, because someone at the table actually said the word pivot card, and it did not apply to what he was talking about. So I was like...
Well, this is hence the inspiration for our episode 46.
So maybe they'll do it. Do you want me to read you off the... or you want me to text these to you?
No, I can't. I'm holding the phone. No,
no,
I'm already
no,
committing
no
a
which
legal
one,
act
no.
for the view of our for the listeners here because I don't sound good enough on the Bluetooth.
Yeah, your Bluetooth sucks.
I know. You read them off. I'll define.
All right, I'm going to start with the one I wanted to go over first. It's some of the basic ones, like the easy peasy ones. People still have difficulty knowing what a bomb pot is. And before you tell us what it is, I want to just say, I think people get weird because like you're at a cash game and people are like, oh, let's do a bomb pot. And then it's like you feel embarrassed to say that you don't really know what it is. And then you could be like, hey, since I'm a great listener of the Overlay, a poker podcast brought to you by CCG Poker and Paramount Social Club in beautiful Houston, Texas, I now know what the hell they're talking about. So Brandon, lead us off with our first poker term, bomb pot.
Basically, to sum it all up, a bomb pot is just a forced ante, and then you go to a flop. So you say, hey, guys, we're going to do a $20 bomb pot. Everybody puts in $20, and they just go to a flop. It's that simple. It's that easy. It's just
there's no blind. Right.
There's no pre-flop action.
Nope.
You're just juicing up the pot, and then it goes boom afterwards, which is where the bomb comes in. You're blowing up the pot.
Yeah,
really
you deal out the hand like normal. So if you're playing PLO or no limit, whatever it is, you get your two or four cards. You put in your $20. Now, you don't get to look at your cards first. Everybody puts in $20. The dealer deals out the cards and then rips out a flop. And then at that point, the hand takes over as normal post-flop action. So it's a post-flop bet, raises and calls, turn, river, betting on those streets as well. So the only street you miss is the pre-flop betting.
So the theory behind it is, the game has been kind of slow. Everyone's playing kind of tight. You force all nine people to put a $10, ante for a bomb pot.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got nine people that are going to the flop.
Hold on. That would be $90 in the pot?
In a $90 pot. And now, anybody can have anything. There's no information given away pre-flop.
Nope.
And it kind of supposed to spark the action and create action in big pots and, if you got top pair, are you really going to imagine flopping a set in a bomb pot? I mean, that's a dream come true.
Yeah, you're getting paid off by a lot.
Yeah. So that's the inspiration behind the bomb pot.
Nice.
Spark up the action, make a big pot, nine-way action, see what happens. But then again, you see the flop and it goes treats normal. It's a normal hand from then on out.
Normal hand from then on out. So that is bomb pot number one on poker terminology. There will be a quiz at the end, everybody, so just make sure you take a little bit of notes. While we're talking about cash games, can we discuss the run it twice in case we lose any listeners going forward? I told you about my run it twice problem.
Yes.
So when somebody says, I want to run it twice, what are they asking for and how does the rules go?
They are asking to run two boards out, each board being worth half the pot. So you got a $1,000 pot, you see the flop, you get it all in. One guy's got a set, other guy's got a flush draw. Let's run it twice, the guy says. The other guy says, okay. Well, now they run a turn, a river for the top board, the first board,
mm-hmm.
and that's worth $500. And then they do another turn and another river for the second board. That's worth $500, and you split them up. Obviously, if somebody wins both boards, they win both
halves. Scoop.
They win the whole pot.
Right. Scoop means you win everything.
But there is a few... I mean, everybody has... It has to be unanimous. If one person... Say it's a three or a four-way all-in or whatever it is. If
or
one
two.
Person
doesn't matter.
Wants to run it once,
yeah.
If one guy wants to run it once, that's it. No discussion. It's over. It's won.
Rip it out.
Rip the river. One pot. Winner take all.
So now, in a normal game, just a regular no-limit game... That's what you're always doing. You just turn river,
you're
all in.
Once, always.
Yeah, you run it once, always. Again, bigger limit games, and the idea and the reasoning behind running it twice is that if you get two big stacks in, they don't want to break the game because there's probably not a big list because it's a bigger game, right? So it's a smaller pool of players, and they're really not looking to break the game by a guy going, and again, can't blame them. One guy flops a set, one guy flops a massive draw. We're going to get it in and see what happens, and... You know, it could break the game. So the other, you know, it's just like a courtesy to the other players, and it like keeps the game going where you don't go crazy, right?
Yes. So now some people only want to run it once because they feel like if everybody knows that you're going to run it twice, they'll get it in with
worse hands,
draw or gambling or stuff. And I view it kind of the opposite. I'm like, well, if you think I run it twice and you want to get it in with your garbage, go ahead and get it in with your garbage.
Right.
I mean, I'll take it. But I mean, you got someone like Jordan who we interviewed early on. He's super aggressive and is trying to get folds from these people. He's going to probably set it to running it once all the time because he wants these people to get pushed off of those weak draws and not call and deny them their equity. And, you know, he doesn't want them to see their 45% twice. He wants
right.
them to fold and him take down the pot. So some people are always twice. Some people are never twice. Some people switch it up based on what they have and how big the pot is. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are like, I'm one time unless it's a $5,000 plus bigger pot, then I'll go twice, which I think is kind of reasonable.
I do. I always say
whatever you want.
I always say whatever you want, but if you were asking me what my actual choice is, it's one or three. I
like the three.
I don't like running it twice because I feel like if I've got a set and you got a draw or vice versa, and we're like 55-45, I mean, odds are we're going to just chop it up, and I don't really want to chop it up. I would like to have some kind of winner off of this hand or a small loser if I end up going one out of three. So I like the three-time route. Let's run it three times
is good.
Again, it's a third of the pot, a third of the pot, a third of the pot, and at that point, typically, one player's going to win two, one player's going to win three. It's very rare that you scoop in a three, you know, in a running it three times, but you know, that's
if you're
my,
in a full,
my preference.
Full ring PLO game, though, can't run it three times. There's not
enough
cards. But, yeah. But
most of the time, we're playing six, seven, eight handed, so it's fine. And then you start getting to the arguing of, like, well, do we just shuffle in the burns? How do we get this? Because I've heard guys that want to run it, like, five times and, like, do stupid shit like that, which really...
And then
it just gets
the time,
dumb.
Which is the whole point that they don't allow you to run it twice in a 1-2 game because, A, there's 15 people on the list. C, the pots are never that big,
right?
And, or B, the pots are never that big. And C, it just takes up so much time. I mean,
right.
I played 1-2 PLO at the Aria with a 500 max, and like people are trying to get in $180 and run it twice.
No.
I'm like, look, I understand you want to run it twice, but let's just go one time. Like, you know, and you got three ways, and you got quarters, and splitting it up, and who gets the extra dollar, and blah, blah,
right.
blah. I mean, it really does take up a decent chunk of time.
Right.
Especially when you're playing shallow PLO,
yeah.
and people are getting in their $100 to $300 stacks. Basically, every hand, someone's all in by the turn.
Yep.
So, we're not running it twice every single hand. So, that's why it's kind of reserved for the time games. Obviously, you Texans play time games all the time. But, you know, the higher rates... or the higher
that's why the house doesn't care right they don't care
right.
if you want to run it twice because they're not
hour.
Getting paid per hand, they're getting paid per half hour. So if
yep.
you get one hand in a half hour, the house don't care because you're paying the same amount, and if the players are happy, then everybody wins. Really quickly, a weird thing about the running it twice is if you get a three-way action into the flop and you've got a main pot and a side pot, At times, you might run the main for a one-time deal because the guy who's all in goes, no, I only run it once. So the main is by default a one-time run, just run it out. Whereas the side pot, if the other two players decide to you know, run it twice, you can. Where we get into trouble or where people get confused is if Brandon and I are in the side pot against Billy, who's all in over here, Billy says, I only run it one time. So for the main pot, it's one time. Then on the side, Brandon and I decide to do running it twice, we can. So they're going to do like a normal dealer would. They're going to do the side pot first and rip that. And whoever wins it, Brandon and I chop that pot up, so we split it up. And then Brandon wins the main pot because we ran it one time and he won the top board. Then there is that confusion where people go, me being the person saying, oh no, Brandon and I decided to run it twice, which means we're running the main twice and the side twice. That's not true. Correct, Brandon?
Correct. And it confuses people because, you know, you're pushing the pot. The pots aren't equally. The first, if there's three guys for $200 or $600 in the main, me and you getting $1,000 on the side, there's $2,000 in the side. Well, the first half is really worth $1,600 and the second half's worth $1,000, you know?
Right.
Because it gets a little, people are confused because they're not equal. That's because the main was only once. And that's when you see the main get run once, is when the shorty's all in for $200. He just wants to run it once. Let's try and triple up or bust.
Or get out, yeah.
But then me and whoever else get in $1,800 each on the side. Well, now there's $3,600 on the side.
Right. There's more in the side pot. Right. It's in that exact scenario. I'm running it twice on the side. If the guy, I don't care about the main pot at that point. But the problem is, me as the other person who ran it twice, I don't. And you win the main, and we split the side. Like, you get all of the main.
We don't split everything.
Right.
We don't split everything.
People get confused. Like, no. Brandon and I decided to run it twice. No, we ran it twice for the side pot.
Right, just because the guy who ran it once didn't win anything doesn't mean we chop everything off.
Correct. If you run the main once, the main is a one-time deal. That pot gets awarded that way, and the side pot's the only one that's run twice. All right, that's enough about running it twice.
Yeah.
What do you want me to do next? You want to talk about...
Oh, you got the list. I don't know.
I do have the list. Let's talk about stuff... Yeah, let's talk about stuff that I get confused on. Let's talk about metagame, Brandon. What is metagame and how does it apply to poker?
So if I'm channeling my old school meta, I think it's like a Greek word for like inside or something like that.
I don't know.
I think I'm literally just making this up.
I'll Google it, but go ahead.
Fact check me on this. Fact check me. But it's basically the game within the game, where the metagame is, you know, it's a lot to do with history and, you know, we're playing a game without inside the game that you know, that I know, that he knows, that she knows, the back and forth leveling. That's the metagame. Something that's completely not GTO, completely not your style, but you're doing it because you and the opponent have this secondary game going on that's inside the game. You know, that's, you know, it's the metagame. It's the psyching the person out to think that you have something you don't actually have because you're playing games on different levels. And it's that simple. It's that, you know, it's not, you know, some people look at a hand of an SFL six betting A7 offsuit in the PCA and the guy calling with like pocket fours or whatever. And you're like, what are they doing? They just got in millions super deep in this tournament where there's 400,000 with A7 and pocket fours. It's the game within the game. Like, you have to throw the theory out the window.
Or adapt. You have to adapt to the current game that you're playing in, and that's where people sometimes get a little lost, where it's like, well, you haven't been here for the last hour and a half, or me and this guy have been doing all this weird stuff. So like, we kind of have a game within the game, or at least a game theory optimal between, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't apply. It's something you've got to pay attention to.
Yeah, you got to throw it out the window because all bets are off because there's something else going on here.
Because again, if you look at it underneath a microscope, that particular hand, you're like, what the hell was that? But then it's like, if you take a broader picture of the entire, that's where metagame comes in. All right, cool. I like that one.
That was pretty good.
That one was pretty easy. We're gonna do some faster ones just because we're at 20 minutes and we've only done three terms. Let's see. Let's get another one. I like texture. Can we talk about texture and how it applies to poker? Texture.
You got board texture. I mean, you got monotone boards, which is when it's all the same suit. You got board textures that, you know, when people are four betting pre-flop with aces in PLO I mean, in the boards 5, 6, 7, you got to know that, you know, this guy's probably got aces here. This is a four texture that hits my range way more than yours. And you got to realize that when you're going to be raising, when you flop top set of jacks on jack 10, 7, two hearts, that's a way different board texture than jack 6, deuce, rainbow.
Correct.
Right? I mean, you're going to be wanting to play your hands differently based on those textures, because that jack 10, 7 with hearts, well, your set of jacks is obviously, you know, a super strong hand, but there's massive, massive draws. There's all kinds of, there's a tons of hands in people's ranges that they're going to continue with. When the board's jack, six, deuce, rainbow, you might not want to be check raising with your jacks, because what are you really going to get called by?
Correct.
A set of sixes or a set of deuces? I mean, you got them cooler anyways. So, like, right, there's not really many draws. So
they're calling no matter what in all general aspects anyways, right? Like, if it's jacks, you know what I mean? They're going to call no matter what you bet. So it's like, however, the hand's going to play itself. So charge
them, pot it. Yeah, get right. The most money in while you're ahead, and then figure it out later, which is why position matters so much in hold'em. But, you know, I'm going to combine two terms into one. And, you know, when it's jack, six, deuce, a lot of people are going to be turning a pivot card to make their hand. So you're going to want to let them turn a pivot card and not blast them off. I mean, if they have, you know, 10, 9, 8, 7, and it's jack, 6, deuce, well, they turn a 10 or a 9 or an 8 or a 7 or a 6, and now all of a sudden they have a Mongo straight draw with a flush draw, and they turn their pivot card. Well, now they're more excited to put some money in the pot.
Right.
So board textures, you need to be aware of those textures. You know, when to decide what to do with certain hands depends a lot on the board texture.
Am I going to slow play? Am I going to be aggressive?
Later, yeah. And when you can bluff later in hand, when all of a sudden, you know, stuff gets really dicey really quick, like that Nancy hand today with the pocket threes and the ace five where she rivered a five. I know it'll be on the Titan.
Yeah, that was on last night.
Coverage.
Because this comes out Friday. That came out last night. But go ahead.
But, I mean, that board was really a crazy texture that dominated her range.
Yep.
And then that's why she tried to pick him off with a pair of fives, and he just somehow had a pair of threes, which right. turned into a straight. But board texture means a lot. So be aware of the board textures.
Board texture, I like. When they say it's a really wet board, they're referring to the texture,
wet.
Right? What does wet yeah. mean?
Wet
is good?
Straighty flushy, drawy.
Straighty flushy, drawy. We're in a poker terminology podcast, and you just used the terms straighty flushy and board parry.
Yeah, so I mean, when the flop is jack of hearts, ten of hearts, seven of clubs, turn is the six of clubs.
That's a super
that's
wet
a very
board.
Wet board. You got clubs, you got straights, you got higher straight draws, you got hearts.
So that's like a sub. Subterm of the texture of the board texture, you could have wet or dry, because a dry board would be the jack six deuce rainbow.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
King, yeah, king,
funny
king 7-2.
Funny rainbow.
Well, that's
story.
Really dry.
I used to.
What
play,
do you got?
Man, 20 something years ago, pre CCG, when I was playing at home games, we were playing at a home game, and this guy used to always go, "Yeah, I had aces, and it was a banana flop." And I was like, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, I had aces, and it was a banana flop." And again, I was like, the fuck are you talking about? A banana flop? There's no such thing as a banana flop. Did a banana come out? Like a joker? A misdeal? What are you talking about? He's like, you know, a banana flop. It was a club, a diamond, and a heart. They were unsuited. Banana flop. And I was like, oh, you mean a rainbow flop?
It was yeah.
Banana. He was like hard and fast. No, the terminology is banana. So to this day, 25 years later, I still, in my mind, if I've got aces and a board comes out with any, all the suits are different, instantly I go, banana flop, bonus. It's great.
And then also, you know, a brick on the river is, you know, something that doesn't complete anything.
Right.
When Paul called it a wet napkin.
That was one of the best lines I've ever heard during... the RFID table in general, he was just like, a deuce came on the river, which was a non-suit, as Brandon likes to say, a non-straighty, non-flushy, non-board pairing card. And he was
a
just
brick.
Like, man, what a wet napkin. pot and just jams it all in. He's just like, I dare you to call me. I know I'm good now. And he had flopped, like you said, like top set, and somebody turned a huge pivot card. And,
yeah, it's a dream river.
Right. And it's just a dud, a brick, a wet napkin. It was a really good one. All right. So in that kind of same gin card is another one. I don't know if we've talked about that as well, but that's pretty easy. Meaning if you did have a draw and you hit your gin card, is the card that not only makes your hand, but it's also the card that's going to get you paid, right?
Yep.
Like that's where people are like, oh, I hit gin on the river. Well, no, you just hit your straight. You probably, the guy, you know, there's two clubs on the board and the board doesn't pair and that club comes on the river and like I check and I've been betting it the whole way with my top set of aces and PLO and a guy bets pot on the river. Like that's not a gin card. You just
hit your draw.
You just hit your draw. Like the gin card is when you have the five of clubs comes out and you have a straight flush with the 4-8 or whatever. That's a gin card because you're playing against a three-way pot where somebody else hit the ace high flush and you're going to blindside him or her. That's a gin card, right? You hit the board pairs on the river with a deuce and you got pocket deuces. So you just quad it up and that guy had
somebody has
right,
a full boat. That's your
that's gin a gin card. So gin card's like a much, much different feeling.
Right.
It's gin.
It is the card. It's not just, okay, there's nine clubs. I hit a club.
It's the card. It's the one of the nine clubs that just massively gets you paid off 100. You just backdoored this fool. I forget that we use so many terms that like I almost feel like when I'm speaking poker I have to like now go back backdoored means you really snuck it around and got him in the rear end. Right.
Yes.
I didn't need to explain backdoor. Okay, anyways,
you didn't need to.
I liked it. I wanted to. All right, let's see what else we got. Let's switch it up a little bit. Let's talk about SPR.
Oof, this is my favorite. And people don't really, it's not a widely known concept. And without getting too theoretical, it's just
if you'd have just said to me SPR, I wouldn't have known what you were talking about. But go ahead, SPR.
So it's stack to pot ratio. It's how much you have left in your stack compared to how much is in the pot.
Correct.
And basically, the higher the stack to pot ratio, the less strong of a hand you have to have to get it all in. And I'll give you an example.
Okay.
If you have $2,000 in your pot in PLO and the pot is 500, that's a 0.25 SPR. There's four times as much in your stack than there is in the pot.
Right.
So that's 0.25. You're not stacking off with aces in PLO. I'm just making broad examples on 7, 8, 9, because that flop hits a million different PLO hands and you got one measly pair of aces and it's no good. Let's reverse it. Say there's 2,000 in the pot and 500 in your stack. Well, now the SPR is 4, and you are stacking off on 7, 8, 9 because the SPR is just too big.
Right.
Like the higher the SPR, the less equity you have because of your pot odds.
And it happens a
basically
ton.
A pot odd. It does.
It does, but it's more than that because it's like situational because it happens so much more in Pot Limit Omaha because I know there are thousands of times where I'm like, I have a very small chance to win here, but I'm putting in 500 to get it in the 3K pot. I'm okay with the fact that I don't need to win here very often because the stacked pot ratio for me, it's what, 8 times, 6 times? Like, I mean, you know, it's a 4K
right.
pot and I got 500. That's eight. I got 8 times my chance. I'm like, this is well worth this $500 punt, even though I think I'm maybe a 10% chance to win. Screw it. If I do win, I'm winning a hell of a lot more money, and in the long run, it's
exactly
a profitable
right.
play.
And that's why people try to get so much money in with aces preflop, is to create a stack-to-pot ratio where it's basically profitable to stick it in on any flop, which is why you always need to be a little bit aware of, well, we're super deep stack here, so I might not need to put in this extra 400 preflop because I still have so much behind.
Right.
You know, I still got to play a pot. You know, we're a thinking type pot. But people are like, well, if I can get my 300 of my 500 in, well, they match it. Now there's 600 and you only got 200 behind. SPR's 3. You don't really care what the flop is. You're in there.
Yep.
Because you've done your job of getting in 60% of your stack before the flop with the best hand. So whatever happens, kind of happens.
All right.
That's SPR.
I like SPR a lot. That's a good one.
Me too.
It's not one that I think about often. We'll go easy and we'll go back to tournament type plays. Satellite tournament.
Satellite is, mm-hmm. you know, you're
not the Dave Matthews Band song, which was pretty good.
Oh, you know, they opened. I went and saw them twice. They opened both times with that.
That's a good song. Go ahead.
It is. Where was I?
Satellite.
Oh, yeah. So you're taking a small buy-in and you're pooling it up and you are trying to earn an entry into another tournament. The famous one is Chris Moneymaker putting in $32
online.
And then winning a 109 seat from that and then taking the 109 and playing a 10K main event satellite and qualifying for that main event seed from $32
and eventually winning the whole tournament.
And then
the poker players Cinderella story. Yeah. It's the greatest story of poker.
Or 1 million. Yeah. And then he's a millionaire. And then boom, the poker boom, which is why we have a podcast today.
Correct.
So
thank you.
If you're listening,
thank you, Mr. Moneymaker.
Even though you're not that great.
Plus not only that, like there's so many things that had to line up. We could do an entire episode on just that scenario and not know anything about it. Not talk about any hands. He played against Sammy Farha, which I always forget as one of like the ultimate high stakes, like poker pro. Like if you were going to write a story, like that's the guy that would be up against Moneymaker. Two, it's Chris Moneymaker. Like his name is Chris Moneymaker. If his name was Chris Horanowitz, nobody would have cared as much. Like his name is Chris Moneymaker. He satellites
so
in for 32 bucks.
I was 12 years old watching on ESPN. I thought that they had nicknames.
No. Yeah.
Like I didn't realize it was his real name. Like I vividly remember being like Moneymaker and then this guy's name is Ivy. Like how is that his name? And
right.
I was like thinking about how these people like created their own like last names. It's like nicknames, like usernames or aliases. It turns out that's his real last name.
It's so
cool. If you were going to write a story, that's how it would be.
Right, I just
32
said that.
To 10K, 10K to 2 million, play against a pro, last name, Moneymaker. Write it.
Right. Book it. Sell that shit to
Book
Universal
it.
Studios.
Yep.
Because I'm not allowed to say the other major studio because of the name of our the club in Texas. So I try not to say it in any other terms in reference to films. Anyways, over to...
So really quickly, touching on satellites. Satellites is very key to get a bunch of smaller people into taking
a
shot into
tournament.
A big tournament that normally wouldn't play.
Ooh, taking a shot. That was last week's episode. How to take a shot. Shot taking in general. It's good. I like that one. That was one of my favorite episodes we've done so far. All right, let's continue with the tournament play, although it does happen in cash games as well, but not as often. What is a squeeze play? In and we're not talking about a squeeze bunt here where you're trying to bunt them in. What is it?
Squeeze is when you have multiple people that have entered the pot and then you have another person squeezing the people. That's a bad definition. I mean, it's kind of true, but let's say you got small blind, big blind, and you got somebody that raises and then you got two people that call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to use the squeeze play and bump it up and make a big raise to squeeze all those people that
all the dead money.
Voluntary. Yeah, all the dead money in right. there in between the initial raiser and me. And you can just squeeze out a lot of hands. And it's basically just a lot of times it's a position play. It's a squeeze play because you know that they're weak and you're going to take advantage of that and you're going to put a big raise out there in hopes that you squeeze them out of the pot.
And what you want to do is have free money in the pot. So like in a tournament, if you were a short stack and you got to be aware of this as a player, you know, earlier in the hand, you know, there's a small raise. You know, three times the big blind, you get one caller, and the next thing you know, you get a second caller. Then it's almost like you get a third caller. It's like this domino effect of poor play, of limping in, of this, you know, calling, you know, this small raise.
Oh, 10-7 suited.
Right.
Oh, queen jack offsuit.
Correct.
Oh,
and then it's like,
fours.
I'm on the button, and I've got whatever, sevens, a mediocre hand that maybe I could just as well be the same type of person and just limp in and be like, nah, I'm going to squeeze it here. I'm all in. And you try to get all of that dead money out. And now you're, again, your SPR is very well or very good because of the fact that you've got all of this dead money in the pot. You might even pick up all of that dead money in general.
Double off.
At best case scenario or worst case scenario, I should say, you're going to get called by that original raiser or one of the other two guys. Now, occasionally I have seen.
Once you get through, that's the thing about the squeeze play is once you get through that initial raiser,
yeah,
you can kind of exhale because you know that he's pulled in and all these other guys don't have him beat, so it's going to go fuck, 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 fuck.
Correct. And you're going to scoop up a big pot without ever showing down a card, which is like
a dream.
But the problem is occasionally if your stack size is not large enough and then you get one caller, the reverse domino effects happen where now those other two guys that you were trying to squeeze out of the hand, they end up calling because they're like, at this point, there's so much money in the pot. I'm going to see what I can do. And then you got to sweat it a little bit.
Right. And now say you had sevens and you get four callers. Well, now you basically got to flop a set to win.
Yeah, you need a
which
seven.
Which means you're out of the tournament 8 out of 9 times.
Good play, bad results, which happens all the time.
Quite often.
All right. What else we got here? We're about 35 minutes, so I'm going to pick a couple big. Delayed C-bet. Yeah. What is a delayed C-bet?
Ooh, I love the delayed C-bet. Yep. So we're going to go the standard folds to me on the button, I raise on the button, and the big blind defends. And we're going to go to a flop, which happens a lot in tournament poker.
Yes, it
especially
does.
Super deep. So then we got a flop of whatever. Doesn't matter what it is. King 4-2. And he checks, I check back. And then now this would be my, that would be my opportunity to see bet.
Right.
Would be, see betting the flop. Well, now the turn comes, whatever. He checks again. I can now use a delayed see bet where I passed on my opportunity to continuation bet on the flop. But now he's given me the aggressive, he's passed the opportunity to be aggressive over team me a second time. And now I'm going to use a little delayed see bet. Where, you know, it's where all, you know, the ace highs and the king highs that, you know, they didn't want to bet the flop because it seems too easy to sniff out. And so they use it on the turn. It's basically just a turn continuation bet instead of betting it on the flop.
I like that one. Delayed C bet. What else we got? Tanking is
a couple more there.
Yeah, we do. Tanking's pretty generic. Most people know what that is. That means when you're just asking for a long time. In fact, as a poker etiquette thing, if you need time, you don't have to apologize to the table. So many times you hear people be like, sorry, guys, this is just a really big hand. I got a big decision here. Like, we get it. You don't have to tell us that.
Especially when you're not tanking all the time.
That's where it gets difficult. If you're a regular tanker, then you need to change your play because you're not benefiting yourself. You're definitely upsetting the table. And it's just, again, it's not against
brutal.
The rules.
It ruins the game of poker.
Yeah, it makes it not fun to play. So don't be a tanker.
Yeah, tank when you have to tank. If you don't have to, if you're trying to save face for 12 seconds, not a minute and 12 seconds.
Yeah, your decision's not going to change.
With your pants down, right. If you get caught with your pants down, that's fine. Pretend like you're thinking about it. You're never calling, but do it for 5 seconds. Do it for 8 seconds. You know, keep a little bit of integrity of the game. Don't go deep into the tank for a minute and a half because you're just trying to pretend at the table you have this big decision when you got ace high and you're mucking.
Well, and then that's the thing. I don't mind tank calling. I mind tank folding. If you're going to tank for a minute and then finally go, all right, F it, I'm all in, or I call, or whatever it is, fine. I'm okay with that. It's annoying. But the annoyance level between a tank call and a tank fold, you just wasted 90 seconds of the tournament and then folded? What are you doing? Like, this is not Hollywood. We're not filming Moneymaker Part 2. Like, what are you doing? Like, get in or get out. You don't need 90. There is 0% chance of most playing. Now, again, if you're playing in the WSOP, it's the final table. Even then, I find it to be a little bit, it's just, your decision's already made. Go with your gut. It's kind of like that old thing. If you're taking a test and you initially think it's B and then you start talking yourself out of one of the other two, like 99.
The best answer is usually just B.
The first answer is typically the one that's right. The odds are better if you're unsure to go with your first instinct. So if your first instinct is fold and you're trying to talk yourself into a call and then 90 seconds later you just fold anyways, just play faster.
Yeah. And it's another thing. It's like, if you're actually thinking things through and going through the math and like, you know, you're relaying hands from 4 hours ago in your head and how he played at that time. And you're doing, you know, you're doing math and you're counting the combinations of hands you can beat, the range you think you have. Like, if you're doing all that stuff, take as much time as you want.
Correct.
But if you're sitting there thinking like, huh, man, I just don't know what to do here. Should I call or should I call? or I fall. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If you're actually running through some stuff in your head, that's a completely different type of tanking
sure.
than these people that just sit there in agony and don't know what to do.
Right.
Well, you're They're not like going to know frozen. What to do 2 minutes from now if no. you're not thinking
then
about
just
anything.
Make a decision. Well, then, and where it comes into play is, and we'll talk about like deal making and stuff, and I'm sure we've talked about it in the past, or we'll talk about it in the future at some point, but when you're like, at the end of a tournament, and now you want to talk about chops or like making a deal or let's kind of, you know, do that. Who's more likely to be, you know, like if you played with this guy, and he's been tanking all the time and then folding and just ruining the game. Like when it comes to the time of like, let's make a deal, screw that guy. I'm not making a deal with him. It's like
right.
it does negatively affect you in general, and right or wrong, it is what it is. But I would be, you know, a little bit more upset about that. All right. Let's see. We can kind of group these two together quickly. Bluff catcher and a blocker bet. Can you make those two kind of work together? Pick
Ooh,
one
I'll
or
try.
The other.
A bluff catcher is basically a hand that you really don't beat anything besides a bluff on the river. You know, if the guy's betting with any of his value range, you're beat. And if he's betting with his bluffing range, you're good. And that your hand kind of turns into, well, I don't beat any of his value hands, so it turns into a bluff catcher. And I think mostly along those lines are like, you know, hero calls are all basically bluff catchers. That's the bottom range of, like, you're beating only his super bluffs. You know, that's a hero call when you're calling with bottom pair. But think of second pair or, like, top pair and bad kicker. Like, he's not value betting anything worse than your holdings. So that means that you have a bluff catcher. You're just hoping that he missed his straight draw. He missed his flush draw. Because if he's betting his value hand, it's top pair or
right.
sets or two pair. Or at the very worst, if he's thin value betting, there's another one.
Yep.
Then it'll be second pair top kicker, which has you out kicked. So if he's never betting anything worse than you, your hand is a bluff catcher if you're trying to call.
It's kind
you
of
can the, only catch his bluff.
Right. It's kind of the opposite of like a hero call. Or it's kind of similar to a hero call. It's like, right? Like you're just kind of, isn't it the same thing? Hero
it
call
is.
And
That's
bluff catcher. It's pretty much
hero
the same.
Call is the very worst of your bluff catching game.
Oh, nice. I like how that one you made work together really well.
Yeah.
All right. And then
yeah.
Let's talk about blocker bets. When people use the term, I had a blocker, what are they talking
so,
about?
There's two different, I think, definitions of blocker bet. This will probably be our last one because it's going to take me 30 seconds. But when you're thinking a blocker bet, that is the pot's huge on the river and you're gonna down bet a little bit. You're gonna block his ability.
Oh, I like that.
You know what I'm saying? Say there's $700 in the pot and you got a hand that like you is strong, but you don't want to call 600.
Right.
You don't want to call $600 on the river because like that's what he's gonna bet. He's gonna bet 600 to 700. And you're gonna have to make a big decision with the jack high flush. So instead, you bet 250 or 300, and then he's gonna call you. And if he calls you and you're beat, well, in your mind, you just made money because
right.
you were going to call 600,
right.
but instead you bet 250 and you saved $350.
Kind of block his bigger bluff or whatever the case
his
is.
Bigger
yeah.
bet. Right. Plus, you know, if you're blocker betting and then they come over the top, you were probably beat the whole time. So you could just pull and get off.
You took a shot and you missed.
Yep. You took a shot and you missed. So that is different than a blocker bet saying you have a blocker. And you're betting representing the ace high flush when you have the ace high flush.
Right. I know you don't have the ace high flush because I have the ace of clubs.
I have the
you
ace
can't
of clubs.
Have the ace high flush. So I'm going to bet it like I have the flush because I have the most important card that you're going to need. But that doesn't always work. It works a lot more in hold'em than it does in PLO or maybe vice versa.
Yeah, vice versa. Because people are always scared of the nuts in PLO, not so much in hold'em. But that is just bluffing with a blocker, which
right.
is different than a blocker bet.
A block bluffer bet. Sounds like blue blocker. That's a bluff blocker.
Bluff. Bluff blocker.
Blafker.
Bet.
Yeah. A blafker bet. It's pretty good.
This is fun.
I think that's going to about do it. Because really, if we go anymore, it could be. And we'll save it for like a poker terminology part two. Because
and we can go on for. I mean, we looked up. I went to upsweek.com. They have like a dictionary of poker terms. And there's
so
like
many
400 of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I was rattling him off, and he's like, all right, slow down here. We only got 30.
We got to kind of slow it up, but it's good. It'll give us another, so maybe in the next like month or 6 weeks, we'll do like a poker terminology part two. As always, thank you for listening. Again, I can't say thank you enough for how many downloads we've received. This is just something Brandon and I started doing just for kind of fun, just to say we did it. And
something to do during quarantine. I think really COVID really pushed us to do it, because we were like, what are we going to do now with our, we were normally, you know, in the old, back before COVID, we were like, well, we don't have time. When are we going to do it? Figure out a time. And now it's like, well, we have nothing to do with our lives for
plenty of time.
Months.
And it's
Let's
been,
do it.
Yeah, and it's been so successful that it's like,
we make time for it now.
Yeah, now we got to do it.
I look forward to it.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Make sure you hit that subscribe, like, follow, comment, hit us up on Twitter. I don't know. Come see us at an event. Brandon promises he's going to make a trip down to Texas.
June 5th, I'll be there.
June 5th in Texas, Houston. Come see Brandon, and you guys know me, so just come over and say hi. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time. Brandon, lean us out.
Farewell, everyone.
Farewell, everybody.